Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Gas Station Podcast Network encourages you to join us at the pumps every Thursday at 9 for the weekly offerings from Yodeling Yank from Balsam Lake. Jake Keller, or Yodeling Yank, will help you find the break and the leap you'll make from your chest voice to your head voice, yodeling like a Swiss dairy farmer in no time. As you fill your tank, you'll be taught some pro tips and you'll be serenaded by some of the Midwest's finest yodelers to both entertain and inspire you as you gas up and grab snacks. Plan your refueling stop well and enjoy Yodeling Yank from Balsam Lake this Thursday. You'll be glad you did.
From the glow of downtown St. Paul's famous number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee.
Let's find the place where the loons call out among moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines.
Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country.
Now here's Bjorn Lloydstad and Fudd Klugman with another Woodland Escape.
Okay, Bjorn, am I dreaming, or was our show just introduced by Tim Russell and Sue Scott from A Prairie Home Companion?
You are not dreaming, Fudd. They are indeed sitting with us right here, in person.
I can't believe
Tim,
it.
Tim, Sue, thank you for joining us here in Cabin Country.
Our pleasure.
Yes, great to be here.
Thank you so much. I mean, we are humbled. We are humbled.
We are humbled. We
mere
are
novices, yes, who aspire to accomplish a tenth of what you have in your great careers. So, now, for those of you listening, if you were one of the over 4 million listeners who tuned into A Prairie Home Companion, each week you heard Sue and Tim doing countless characters on the show. Who are some of the better-known characters on the Prairie Home Companion? Yeah, dropping by the studio.
I did a lot of dead celebrity voices. People left us a long time ago.
Be a little surprised as they knock on the door.
That's right. Yeah. And I didn't have any regular characters except for the ketchup advisory board guy.
Yes.
These are the good times. To have a bowl of ketchup on your linguine.
Well, there was Pops.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was Pops in the
Story of Bob.
The Story of Bob, right. The young artist.
Right, and I was Bernice. Oh, how about some more cheesy potatoes, Bob?
Oh, I think Rex the dog ate the cheesy potatoes.
Oh, Pops, now look at him. He's going to go poop at everything. It's not good.
And, of course, Mom is one of the most popular characters on the program.
Dwayne, yes. Honey, it's your mother calling.
Yes.
Mom?
Yeah. And you were Dad.
Yes,
you were Dad.
Yeah, I was a very phlegmatic character.
Kind of monosyllabic.
Actually, he at one time wrote, he being Garrison Keillor, wrote a couple of scripts using Dad as a foil before, you know, the Mom series really took off.
Yeah.
I think one of them was in a fishing boat. They were both out fishing, being very taciturn, not wanting to speak to each other as father and son.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
A Minnesota
right.
feel to it.
I think there were some Father's Day there were some Father's Day shows where...
That's right, yeah.
Hi, Dad, it's me, Carson.
Yeah?
I just called to wish you a happy Father's Day.
Okay.
It's this weekend.
Is that right?
Yep.
Well, thanks for the reminder.
Yeah, I just called to say hello, so...
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Fred Farrell would be another character.
Yeah, that's right. Fred Farrell and... What was the Fred Farrell thing? And the
it's, like, okay. It's been a few years.
Fred Farrell's Wild Animal Calls.
Oh, that's
and
it.
That
oh,
would be an
it.
Opportunity
Fred
for Tom Keith and Fred Newman to do a long series of animal calls, including the ungulates, which would be the deer and the antelope and the elk, and they all sounded the same.
And except the elk. Hi, Phil.
Yeah.
That was the elk.
Hi, Phil. How you doing?
Hi, Phil.
That's Fred Farrell. Nature is full of pesky creatures. It'll drive you nuts if you try to exterminate them, so why not bend them to your will and get them to do stuff? Bats, for example. See, bats can be a major pest. They leave bat droppings all over, and they suck the lifeblood from your children. Well, that's no good.
There was Ruth Harrison.
The
reference librarian. Thank you very much.
There is a difference.
And then there was Trent or Brent, depending on who was working on the show, Fred or Tom or myself.
Or Kent.
Golly, Miss Harrison.
Yeah.
Oh, Trent.
Huh?
Take off that iPod, please. This isn't fun time.
I was listening to an audiobook, Miss Harrison.
Oh, audiobooks are for people driving in cars. What, are you too lazy to pick up a book in your own two hands?
Well, I was eating a sandwich.
Both of you have CDs. They were put out a little while ago.
Yes.
The Man of a Thousand Faces. Or voices.
Right.
My face is changing daily.
Could be. Actually, that might be a good relaunch. You know, sort of a
Man of a Thousand Faces.
Yeah.
Well, with YouTube.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of CDs and.
Sue Scott's Seriously Silly.
Right.
You were about to say that, I'm sure. So I was going to jump right in with there. That.
You see, exactly. that's what's fun about doing this show. I can just prompt, and you guys can take over.
Okay. Good.
Anyway, there was a great one with Mom calling Dwayne, and it was about helping Dad put in the dock, which is so perfect cabin country.
Well, now, your dad and I were just talking about going up to the cabin. I mean, it's Memorial Day weekend.
Right, I'm aware of that, yes.
Right, so we were going to open up the cabin, maybe put the dock in, but, you know, I suppose we could hire someone to come up and do it for us, you know.
Sort of busy this weekend.
Oh, of course you are. Well, I assumed you would be, honey,
well,
and that's just fine. You know what? We don't have to put the dock in. I mean, we don't even need to keep the cabin, for goodness sake, honey. I mean, you know, we only keep it because we thought, well, maybe someday, you know, if you should ever have a family, you know, you might like to take them there, huh?
Mother, you know.
I mean, we only bought the cabin for you 40 years ago, huh?
The guilt, you know, the passive-aggressive Minnesota nice thing.
Yeah.
When did that strong Minnesota accent come into your characters? Was that from the beginning? Or
I'm not from Minnesota.
We'll be right back.
Well.
I grew up, I should say. I was actually born in California, but I grew up in Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I claim that as my hometown.
Absolutely.
And I have family that was originated here in Minneapolis, but I came here for theater. Mm-hmm. So I had the pleasure of moving up here and hearing the Minnesota accent, so to speak, really strongly.
Uh-huh.
And I had all sorts of friends that was like, I don't have an accent. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have an accent. I'm like, oh, I think you do, actually.
That coffee looks pretty good today, then.
Yeah? Well, you care for cream or sugar with that, then?
Well, if it's handy, sure, but, you know, it don't matter. I like it either way.
All right, then. Well, here you go. So, Carl, did you hear about this new language they're teaching in the schools now?
No. What's that about? That?
Oh, yeah. Well, some new program or something. I don't know. They say that kids in Minnesota, they grow up learning this whole separate language.
Huh.
And teachers ought to know it, too, so they can teach better, don't you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. It's called Wobegonics.
Oh, huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I came in fresh. And then could you know, really, really hear it. And then there were definitely, Tim's a native, and there's some things that you had
born
to learn.
Born and bred in St. Paul.
Yeah. But there were things that you had to learn not to say.
Yeah. Bank.
Big. Bag.
Boat.
Bag.
Boat.
Bag. Bag. Bag.
Big.
You say bag. You got to get the bag. You got to better take your bag to the bank. What was that, Tim?
Today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a natural thing of growing up around here. So
absolutely.
Mostly the neutral thing is what you strive for if you want to be in broadcasting and or other things.
Well, and I grew up because Arizona can, unless you are, you know, from the very, very strong Mexican-American community that's there, or you're snowbirds from wherever. There's really no sort of regional sound,
right?
Especially in southern Arizona. So I sort of I didn't have an accent that I had to lose, which was great because I mean I had some friends who were from Oklahoma, some actor friends from Oklahoma. They had to learn to get that out of there, and then Minnesotans and people from New York grew up in New York, and I was like, no, I don't, I'm it's kind of standard American English. This is all good.
That's actually, that was something I was going to ask, is what is the Arizona accent? I've got a sister who retired there. And well, all our neighbors are from Toronto and Iowa and Wisconsin.
Exactly.
And
there is the, there is the cowboy sound, but the cowboy sound's not different than the, kind of the cowboy rancher sound is not that much different than the farmer thing.
Yeah.
Because I lived in Iowa. I worked for a theater company in Iowa for quite a few years when I first came up from college. And then it's like, oh, you guys sound like the ranchers. It's kind of a little bit of that casual CB talk kind of thing. So, but otherwise, you know, there's no INGs.
Real strong.
Everything's like, we're going, we're doing this.
Sure.
It's kind of that. But otherwise, there was really no sound.
On the show, Garrison, every once in a while, in the middle of a script, would, speaking of accents, just put in the word gibberish. Preceded by some ethnicity, many of which would get you in serious PC trouble now, I think.
Oh, I think
for example, I'm talking about the Indian accent, you know, that doesn't work. Or Japanese, and then he'd say French gibberish, that would be, you know, a way to spread the accents around.
Right.
Do you remember that French-Canadian band that was on the show? And you were doing a French gibberish thing, and they came running in from backstage, and they're all, like, laughing hysterically because he was doing this French gibberish.
Yeah. Oh.
So then we asked them, what does American gibberish sound like? And it was brilliant. Because we can't do that. I mean, it was very clipped. And nasally, and but they weren't saying real words, and it was like hilarious to have that perspective from somebody else.
The truth is, everything sounds better in a foreign language. Opera sounds better. Movies just are so much more profound in a foreign language. So if you're not doing that well in school in English, you might try learning a foreign language. At Earl School of Language, you learn all the languages that make you sound really smart, like German. Like French. Like Russian. Everything but Swedish.
No.
You speak Swedish and somebody's going to hand you a broom and ask you to clean up, but... All of the others are good, and because Americans are monolingual, you won't have to speak a language very well to sound really smart. Yes, you can learn to speak not very well in just a few weeks. So astonish your friends, confuse your teachers, ESL, Earl's School of Language.
We would go to places around the country to do the show on the road, where sometimes the accents were so thick from the locals. I remember being in a cab coming from the airport with in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
I could not understand him.
Oh, really?
He was like, hey, little old gal, we got a car plant going in over there. And they're going over there. And over there, they're going to build a new school. I kept going, I'm sorry, excuse me? Can you say? And then he kept raising his voice at the end, so it sounded like he was asking questions. So I go, I'm sorry, one more time. And then I started going, sure, okay. I just didn't know what he was saying.
Yeah.
2.5 days later, when we're leaving, I had the same cab driver, just happenstance, and I could understand him.
Oh, really?
We'd been in town just long enough that it's like, oh, my ear was picking it up. And I thought, was the hotel cab drivers that were pulling up. It was the same guy. He's like, hey, little old gal. All of a sudden, I'm thinking, oh, now I can. Yeah. He's talking about the Mercedes-Benz plant that just came in. He's talking about the new high school. Yeah. And I didn't understand any of that before. And sometimes you would come up to me backstage and go, hey, that stagehand really sounds like Nashville, or really sounds like Cajun. So we were like, go listen to that person, or go listen to that person over there.
We did the show in Edinburgh, part of a trip to Ireland and Edinburgh.
Ironic you just said that, because Glasgow was where I lost track.
Glaswegian, But Garrison wrote a script, of course, and he likes to torture us by throwing in accent. So.
No, and I
didn't know what's going on.
It's great. It's good.
A lot of glottal stops.
It's great. Wow. It's good. And then we were in Limerick, and we were checking in with each other because you were saying they say the TH is like T's.
Yeah.
So they say this, they say T's. So there was the two teens. So we're like, no, the thing would be not two things, it would be two tings. And so Tom Keith famously said, he said, so this would be two tings. And he goes, and then the turd. Can you see, Don, can you help us see the three fingers?
Don's nodding. I think we're okay here. He's holding up the three. I think
two tings, and then the turd.
We can use turd.
But that was interesting to realize that the Limerick, Ireland, had that specific thing that you didn't hear in Dublin.
We went to St. John's Castle there where they had a cheesy diorama with a multimedia presentation of something that took place 500 years ago.
Yeah.
And speaking of 500, they had the local actors doing the character parts of this big slaughter that happened there. And one mother voice saying, 500 of them lying in the mud.
Yeah. Lying in the mud. And so that was a thing for about 5 years.
Yeah.
There's 500 of them lying in the mud.
Wow.
Slow moment on stage.
Yeah, exactly. 500 of them. Time down off your high horse. Look at the 500 here.
Tell us what it was like traveling with the show and performing in front of audiences all over the world with something that was quite regional, this Minnesota small town kind of thing. How did different audiences respond?
Well, what's interesting is sometimes our St. Paul audience was the quietest. And people would sometimes be, there would be a little like, they're so familiar with us. Mm-hmm. And I said, they're so familiar with us, they're buying, if we're doing like a 4 week run in St. Paul, they're buying tickets for all 4 weeks, maybe 6-8 tickets, they're bringing their neighbors, their family, and there are diehard fans, but they're so familiar that it's kind of like more like chuckly stuff as opposed to, oh my God. And then on the road, what you would add to that was people who had maybe never seen us live before, and they couldn't believe we were in their town. So there'd be a lot of ha ha ha, a lot of big laughs. But wouldn't you agree, there was a lot of belly aching backstage. The St. Paul audiences were so quiet. And I used to say,
flat.
Yet, they are our biggest fans. They are diehard fans. They come back over
every
and over
show,
and over.
500 that would march to the mood.
In the mood.
Be right with you.
They're in there
every
in the mood.
Step of the, I might not
or
laugh.
The snow. You know? But so I think that was always interesting. And then you would hear that small town thing, like you're wondering. We would go to Town Hall, the show in New York, and afterwards they're like, oh my God, I love you guys. It's just so reminiscent of like the little town.
Yeah, growing up in Brooklyn, we had the same stuff.
We had the
going
same
on.
Thing.
It's unbelievable.
Really? It's the thing, the family and everything and everything. It's like old radio. It's all over the country you hear that kind of thing.
Which brings it back to the point that Garrison tapped into some universality with his Lake Wobegon stories. It's something familial that no matter where you are in the world and or country, you're relating to something.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and even jumping in again about that, about the mom character, I would hear in receptions and things afterwards, oh, you sound just like my Cuban mother. Oh, you sound like my Irish mother. Oh, you sound just like my Jewish mother. And I was like, okay. So there was a universality there with that passive aggressiveness.
Yeah.
And I was actually channeling my own mother many times, which my sister would go, oh my God, I can't believe you put that one thing in there. We followed the script, but there was some little nuancey things that I would throw in that were very much my own mother. Mm. But to have that they would be like, no, that's exactly like my Norwegian mother. That's exactly like my,
Wouldn't you rather be at the lake this summer? I mean, what is this book you're working on anyway,
It's a book. That's
oh,
all. It's
well,
just a book.
Gosh, I hope it's not something we're going to have to explain to the neighbors someday, honey, I mean, it's not about us or anything,
no, it's
is
not.
It?
It's,
huh?
It's a coming-of-age story, okay?
A coming-of-age story. Honey, you're 50 years old. I mean, come on. Your coming-of-age has come and gone.
Thanks.
Don't you think?
Listen, it's called Whatever. Huh? That's the title of it, Whatever. It's a, it's a book about ambivalence.
Oh,
okay?
So it is about us.
No,
then.
It's not.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, the family dynamics thing is universal, as you say.
Yeah.
So that's.
But I think, I wonder if it's the audio experience. You know what I mean? So they're not looking at us to say, well, that doesn't look like my mom.
Right.
It's just the audio experience.
Theater of the mind kind of deal.
Right. And so then they can go, wow, my mother would do that too. Or, as Tim was saying, you know, the little town like Wobegon, whatever, whether it's Brooklyn or it's L.A. or, you know, in you know, Midwest, they're just picturing their own setting because it's audio. And, you know, when we would get families that would come up and the 10-year-old kid was like, can I have your autograph? And the parents would go, he's a big fan. And I would go, God bless you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God bless you with all the options for stimulation.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And you've got a 10-year-old kid who is loves listening to the show and the imagination that he's bringing to his own, you know, his own. In his mind. So I think that was always really cool.
That's the kid in the Hopalong Cassidy t-shirt, right? With the
maybe.
Suspense, you know, hey, this is...
Well, it could be the kid that grows up in the 1 hour of television. Now it's like 1 hour of phone, you know, hour on your phone and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I mean, you know, the fact that even at school, I mean pre-COVID, but at school, all the different media that's used. And these kids were just like, we love you to listen to you.
A lot of them are captive audiences in the back of the seat of the car, too.
Right.
Sure, that's there.
You're not going anywhere.
I'm listening while you're driving to the
cabin. Yeah, it's easier to just put down this phone where I've lost my signal and listen to the show.
That's
right. And then there are the kids who grew up and go, I grew up listening to, you know, the Not Now, Nora, listening to you every Saturday, life stopped during that. And when I became an adult and my new boyfriend said, I've got tickets to Prairie Home Companion, she was like, are you freaking kidding me? And it was sort of a rebellion time.
Yeah.
No, I hate that show. I hate that show. I want to rebel. I want to do something different. And then they get old enough, they go, no, it's. I guess I'm back. I'm back. It's totally cool.
Who else is on the show tonight, Mr. Tim Russell?
Vic Tanny, Danny Kaye, Danny Boy, Boy George, George Jones, Joan Collins, Colin Powell, Paul McCartney, Courtney Love, the Leuven Brothers, Olivia Newton-John, Lawrence, Olivier, Faye, Dunaway, Faye, Ray, Ray, Stephen, Stephanie, Ford, Ford, Torres, Tori, Amos, Famous, Amos, Amos, and Andy. Sandy Dennis, Dennis Hopper, Hopalong Cassidy, Sandra D, Aunt B, Bruce Lee, Mr. T, Ted Turner, Flipper, Dasher, Dancer, Johnny Cash, Flash Gordon, Gordie Howe, The Who, Betty Boop, Betty Davis, David Letterman, Helen Reddy, J. Paul Getty, Conway Twitty, Kitty Wells, Nervous Nelly, Good Golly, Miss Molly, Jane Pauley, Silly Putty, Peppermint Patty, Juicy Lucy, Swoozy Kurt. It's Kurt Russell and me, Tim Russell.
Sounds like a show. I know I'm looking forward to it.
My family came from all over the great state of Minnesota. But it was interesting getting together around the holidays. We had, let's just say, two distinct political camps at every family gathering, one of which was much larger than the other. But that could all be set aside when somebody popped in tapes of...
Yeah.
PHC, you know, the Prairie Home Companion. And all of a sudden, everybody just sat down and nobody cared anymore about the political state of the country or tax rates or gas prices or anything. And one in particular, I just remember watching my dad and one of my aunts who just fought like cats and dogs over politics.
Yeah.
And it was a piece on, there was a new Lake Wobegon satellite that had gone up. And somebody was saying, here it comes again, whizzing by. And it was like a drone aircraft or something. And I was maybe 9 years old at the time, and I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. And they were like, look at the kid, he's losing it. But they all put aside their differences and just sat down. And they were all of that radio show generation, too. I mean, these were aunts and uncles who talked about Lights Out and, you know, suspense.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
My dad was a big Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy fan, and all this kind of stuff. And I'd sit there, a child of the late, you know, 60s, early 70s, going, I have no idea what you're talking about, but I want to know more about it.
Yeah.
And now we're both radiophiles. You know, we love old radio shows. And I even had some old radios in my home for a while. Not unlike, you know, Tim's place here.
Yeah.
And finally we had to move, and it was... Those
not enough room.
Yeah, they don't work, for one thing, and that's a really strange
plan. Well, there's such a... I came home on Christmas, and my parents... There was a repeat on that Saturday. We were off that week.
Yeah.
And my mom's like, oh, it's almost, it was on at 5 o'clock in Arizona. It's almost time for the show. And I'm thinking, well, we don't have to listen to the show. It was a show from last year or whatever.
We've heard it.
She goes, no, we got to listen. So she pulls, they put chairs up. And I go, do you guys watch the radio? And she's like, I guess we do. Well, that's where your voice is coming from. And I'm like, seriously? And she, but they hadn't even realized it. My dad goes, yeah, I guess we pull our chairs up and we watch the radio.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Like, okay, that is days. So funny. Yeah. And they go, I guess it is kind of funny. We didn't even think of it. But we're like, well, that's where your voice is coming from. So, of course, we watch the radio for 2 hours.
Face
what else
the,
are we going to do?
Face the voices. Wow.
I go, you know, you can move around and do stuff.
The old vintage Warner Brothers cartoons where the radio starts actually moving its speaker like a mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to me. There's an escaped criminal.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, let's watch the radio.
Did you have any, speaking of like fans and being, well, world-renowned or recognizable voice actors, did you have any of those weird kind of like, oh, that's what you look like? Or,
oh yeah,
you know, any weird fan stories of like...
They always thought I was older and heavier.
And
they always thought I was Sue's dad.
So. Oh, really?
There was the one time.
Yeah, the one time.
The one time.
Durango, Colorado.
Mr. Scott.
There was one time. Your dad. Yeah, it's like, he's not my dad.
No.
That's funny.
Tim Russell. That's
I've got her by a couple of years. Let's just say that.
No, there people would come up and they would say, usually if they said that, they'd go, I thought you were older and a little heavier. and I thought that was a okay, sure. Yeah. I mean, we all have. I mean, I see people like on from National Public Radio. I'm thinking, no, that's not, no.
Right,
that's not what Nina Totenberg looks like. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have an image in my mind, and based on your voice, and that's not it.
Wow,
absolutely.
So yeah, we had that. We did have that.
So how did the writing work? I suppose Garrison did most of the writing, but did you, you know, other than writing on the fly, did you write?
He's the greatest dialogue writer of all time.
Yeah, he really is good at it.
And so there was no heavy lifting on our part.
Right.
Our big job was to sort of make it as real as possible, as natural as possible, by maybe filling in just a certain reaction
O's and ahs and ums and so's and wells. Mm-hmm. We would throw a lot of those in. Well, or so... Which may not be in the script, but yeah, he was an incredible dialogue writer. He is an incredible dialogue writer.
And an actor, too. I mean, he really, his timing was spectacular. So
yeah.
So I was just a joy.
And people would think we were improvising, and we'd say, no, that was all scripted, except for those little connective tissue, that's all scripted.
Well, then how did rehearsals work? Like, how often did you rehearse? Or
he was loath to rehearse.
Oh, okay. Wanted to keep it spontaneous.
Like the creativity.
Yeah, he thought that would kind of...
Immediacy.
Yeah, but there were times then something would be really complicated, especially with sound effects, and we would do Friday night, we would see the script for the first time, Friday night.
Wow, okay.
And so we do a read-through, sometimes, usually just around a table, every once in a while on mic, on the road, but usually just around a table, and he wanted to hear it, and they would just kind of read through it once, okay, that's good. They'll all change, people. They'll all be different tomorrow.
He would say that? He would just warn you?
These will all change. Okay. This will all don't.
Oh, I've got some work to do.
Yeah.
Well, I was one of those people that showed up in your St. Paul audience from time to time. Because we knew it, but we loved it.
Yeah.
And it was all fresh, but I think that's a Midwestern thing, is to not get too explosive in your laughter because, well, you draw attention to yourself. We were famous for buying the tickets to the rehearsal night.
Oh, yes, we did that. We did that for a couple of years. We did that. Yeah. Yes, we did that.
Saturday evening.
Actually, sometimes those were better shows.
Oh, they were great.
Oh, really?
Because they were wonderful.
He never cut anything.
Yeah.
He just let...
Yeah.
And all the scripts were in.
Yeah.
And when you're limited to the 2 hours, you know, you have to cut half the scripts. So.
And sometimes, there would be a rundown leading into the Saturday show, and that would change and evolve during, you know, before the show, during the show. I mean, there's the famous picture of him reaching around Tim and changing a line during a catch-up advisory board script. And I see him. I actually got a heads up. Tim was doing the opening monologue, the gym opening monologue. And I hear Garrison. He calls over Albert, our stage manager. And right behind me, he said, they have the wrong script.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm thinking that was so rare that would ever happen. We had people that...
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. And people. There are people. You know, people. Don, you know what that's like.
Yeah,
Dada Theater, right? This is all, it's like a Camus piece.
So he's like, they have the wrong script. And I'm thinking, well, we're live, baby. We're in the middle of all this. This ain't, you know, nothing's going to change now. So they go scurrying off, and Albert's thinking, and he's doing scripts, and Garrett goes, no, that's okay. And I'm watching all this happen while Tim's doing this monologue, this opening monologue. And then Garrison reaches around Tim with his little Sharpie, because he has stock in Sharpie. And he starts writing, and now it's time for me to speak.
Oh my God.
Now I've got a couple of lines, and I'm trying not to be distracted because he's writing some new lines for Tim to say. And then Tim says those lines, and you never know. But there's a famous picture. Robert Altman loved that. There's a famous picture of...
Yeah. He had it blown up and put in his production office when he did the movie, A Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah.
And when Sue and I went in to sort of get his approval...
Can you walk and talk at the same time, he said. I said, I hope.
I think so. Yeah.
He pointed the picture out and said, that's what I love about radio. You know, it's just spontaneous and...
Well, but I gave you all the credit because a little bit myself too, but we didn't drop a beat, we didn't stumble, and this major thing is going on, and there's the audience is reacting.
Yeah,
they're watching it live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're watching it, you know, happen. The radio audience doesn't know anything. They're just doing a catch-up script.
Yeah, they're all staring at their radios.
Yeah, nothing got dropped. And I said, you know. You didn't see. I saw Garrison. I'm like, oh my God, he is actually going to do this. Okay. And you didn't even flinch. You're like, all right, well, whatever. Something's being written in the margin. I guess I'm supposed to say those things. So Tim's composure was pretty stunning.
Well, and Tim, you have a good story, don't you, about dropping your script during? I think you're doing a Bush.
With Martin Sheen. I was doing all the former presidents talking to President Jed Bartlett.
Okay, yeah.
And somehow at the very end, I don't know which president I was doing, George W. Bush.
Yeah.
And he was trying to give advice to Jed Bartlett there. And right at the end, it was at the end of the whole script, and somehow I dropped the last page. And I had a line, and then I looked down and I picked it up, and I kind of forgot what I was doing there. And it sort of made sense.
Yeah.
That sounds like several speeches I watched.
This is at the Hollywood Bowl with 15,000 people out front. And so they kind of reacted to what was going on. But
yeah, yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being old. I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I'm as strong as ever I was. Go ahead, hit me in the stomach. Do it. Do it as hard as you can.
Oh, please. No. I'd rather not, Arnie.
I'd be glad to do it for you. Not you. Not you. Hit him. Hit me. Come on, give me your best shot, Mr. Fakey.
Oh, I don't want to hit you,
right
Arnold.
In the stomach. Come on.
Come on,
hit me. Hit me. Do it.
All right, fine, if you insist.
Go ahead.
So much for Conan the Republican.
I told you I didn't want to do it, you big doofus.
I'm sorry, I kind of got lost there for a moment.
That's happened before, Mr. Fenton.
That was one of my favorite scripts because, you know, talking to Martin Sheen as Jed Bartlett was really fun.
I bet.
Will, I suggest that you perhaps should go back on TV. You know, that kind of thing.
But there were definitely times when somebody would say, there was something happened during the show and there was a big laughter, like in the, what, you know, what was going on there? It's like, oh, well, you know, something like that was going on.
Right, yeah. Something that only the live audience.
That's what makes it so special
to
be in the audience. You know,
yes,
that was,
right.
That was the added thrill of just being there.
Right. And there were times when Garrison would cut the script during the show. And so I stood next to him because it was a boy-girl-boy thing. And so I would see him get out the Sharpie, and he's looked at the next page. We were doing a guy noir or something. And he puts a big line through something. I'm thinking, okay, here we go. And then he passes it to me. It's like, and I might even not be my thing that he's cutting. He's cutting some little thing that maybe Fred was doing with the thing, or he just wants to cut for time.
Right.
And so he's passing it down, and our eyes get really big. But then we would, and it would be seamless. It's like, all right, well, that thing's cut in the next page. We're going to cut that. And then you would just, you hadn't rehearsed it that way.
Right.
But you have to make that jump work, and that happened often.
Yeah, the audience loves seeing the sausage being made. You know,
last thing I'll say about that is the backstage where he'd say, "This feels a little long," like a musical guest was finishing up.
Okay,
I think I'm going to make some cuts, and then all of a sudden the song was over. He'd go, "Follow me," Yeah. So he's like, I'm just going to be making cuts. You just got to follow me. And we're like, okay.
Wow.
Follow me.
Oh, so you kind of spread your pages out to see what pages were.
And then he
next.
Would jump. He would jump. And then it was really hard when we were doing those joke shows because he would all of a sudden jump. And we were literally like, I don't know. So we would get lost. And then someone would just take that person's joke because it's like, pages are turning. That's okay. I'm looking over at Tim. Tim knew where we were. Okay, good. Go. Then it's like, okay, now I know where Fred is. Okay, good. I'll do it. That happened a lot in the joke shows.
Joke shows were so much fun.
They were great, but they were the most terrifying for us.
I bet.
They really came together at the last second. And we had no idea. Yeah. He'd have 30 pages of jokes, and we had no idea what was going to come
up. And sometimes he would turn 3 pages and go, Sue, tell us the joke about... And you're like, I will if I can find it.
Funny story about that one.
And I'm like, yeah. And then he'd go, or Tim, do you could tell it. And he'd be like...
Oh, my gosh.
But then the prompt we would get is, don't read it.
Mm.
Don't read it. Yeah. Don't read it. Yeah. You sound like you're reading people
because
we've never seen the joke before. So we don't read it. But it was ultimately a very good prompt because it wasn't like, no, you're not allowed to read it. It just don't sound like you're reading it. And kind of bring it off the page and throw in the little connective tissue and make it sound like, you know, so there's this guy as opposed to a man walks into a bar and he says, it's like, okay, so this guy walks into the bar, okay? Mm. And, you know, that... that's what he wanted. He wanted that casual stuff.
These two senior citizens are sitting in the activity room of the old folks' home, and the old woman says to the old guy,
I bet I can tell how old you are.
No, you can't.
Stand up.
Okay.
Now drop your trousers.
Okay.
Now turn around.
Yeah?
You're 82.
That's right. How did you know that?
You told me yesterday.
We'll be back in a moment with more from Tim Russell and Sue Scott after these important messages.
This segment of Cabin Country is brought to you by Horseshoe Plug, that satisfying chaw you might share with Granddad. Horseshoe. You'll be hard-pressed to find a more pleasing wad.
Mitt's Coffees is proud to offer their newest blend for coffee lovers across the Northwest.
Supremian Colombo, a rich, full-bodied dark coffee that is strong enough to be your daybreak blend, but not so powerful that you'll have to stop after 2 or 3 cups. Supremian Colombo is a great choice for an everyday blend, a brew that will accompany you through your day while letting you still get a rewarding night's sleep. Join the legions of foreign place kickers and disheveled private investigators who swear by it.
Just one more cup.
Supremian Colombo is the coffee for you.
Brought to you by Mitt's Coffee Roasters, the brew that flew with the great Northwest.
Hey, we are lucky enough to be joined on Cabin Country here tonight by two of the North Star State's premier ornithologists, renowned authors and bird identification experts, Proustadt and Jim Treswell.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Yes, we love that you've given us time on your show to help aspiring birders learn some basic calls.
Well, it's a real privilege to have you both with us today. Learning bird calls, such a wonderful pastime and so helpful when you're outdoors.
Well, in your most recent field guide, Sing a Song of Sixpence from Bough and Wire and Vine is currently on the Cabin Country bestseller list for essential field guides. How were you able to compile such extensive work into this handy guide?
Well, actually, early in the practice, mnemonic devices are very helpful, you know. They get ingrained into your memory and you don't forget them.
Mm-hmm.
Those memory phrases are what we'd like to share with your listeners today to get them started.
Right.
Oh, excellent. Well, where would you have us start?
Let's begin with that little charmer of both backyards and forests alike, the song sparrow.
Oh, sure.
Okay? Now, I always hear the song sparrow sing out, blades, blades, skate, skate round the stinging nettles, ettles, ettles.
Uh-huh. And my version of that song is high, tight, fade, greet me like Hansel or Gretel, Ethel, Ethel. Or shame-faced Abe, put the pedal to the metal, Ethel, Ethel.
Yes. Okay, Jim. Well, whatever. Well, the song sparrows have other songs as well, like this vocalization. Zip, strip, the flippin' mall boys, fill your ears.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I always remember it as a clip, clip, hop, vines, toboggan, clairvoyant squirrel. Or Madge, 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 pour liquid soap. You're soaking in it. What?
All right. Well, you see, not all birdsong experts agree on their mnemonics. Honestly, it's whatever works for you, you know, to remember the call.
That's right.
Right. So here is one of my favorites, the American Robin. Now, I compare its call to the following rhyme. Okay? Knees high, flying machines, rope-a-dope, granny.
Wow, really?
Yes.
Well, you see, actually, gentlemen, I've always heard the Robin song is chins up, double chins, video nanny.
Okay, and that really lacks the professionalism our students desire. Double chins.
What? Well, no, I keep telling you, it's whatever sticks in people's minds, Prue, so they don't forget that one. It's goofy, I'll grant you that, but it's memorable.
Okay.
That's the point.
Agree to disagree. We have a couple more for you, if you would be interested.
Oh, yes, that'd be wonderful. Okay. Please, thank you.
The
yes.
Barred Owl. Now, many bird call experts claim the barred owl's call sounds like, who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all? But I always hear the barred owl's call as, new soiled shoes, two overshoes, trolls.
Mm. Wow, overshoes.
Overshoes.
Trolls?
Yes. Yeah, again, we don't always agree on these things. Actually, here's how I remember the barred owl's call. Who took the snooze? Who chewed me snooze, Paul?
Snooze?
Snooze, yeah.
Ish. Snooze? Jim, that's just gross.
What?
Really? I don't know how many potential birders you've turned off with that one.
Okay, fine.
That right there.
That's what it sounds like,
no, it doesn't.
Okay?
It doesn't sound like that at all.
I didn't tell the owl to discuss snooze. I'm not sure how we started going down the road of bird calls we disagree on here. Let's see what Fudd and Bjorn say about this last one. Guys,
all right.
Will you tell us which phrase is more memorable?
Yeah.
The hermit thrush. Okay. The hermit thrush.
The hermit thrush.
Many an ornithologist says the mnemonic phrase for this thrush is, why don't you come to me? Here I am right near you.
I remember the hermit thrush by hearing these words. Pro bono rubber tree, Miriam spies tap shoes.
Well, now that's just ludicrous.
No, it's not.
I mean,
not.
Come on,
no,
gentlemen, you see what see what you think of mine here, and then we'll get back to which one is better. I don't speak hillbilly. The Holstein speaks the whole truth.
Oh, it's just...
Well. Yeah, well, they're both good. I hate to be put on the spot here, but I can't decide.
Yeah, me neither. I like them. I like them all. I think you're right. You know, whatever works for the individual.
There you go.
If I might change gears for a moment here, it appears that a great many Minnesota bird calls seem to include the word shoes in your mnemonic device.
Kind of interesting. Isn't that interesting? That is interesting.
Here, basically, it's easy to remember.
True, shoes.
You know, it seems to stick for our students.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Prue's pro bono rubber tree, I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. And what about yours, Jim?
What?
Double chins and snooze. I don't speak hillbilly. That is not at all what I would say.
You know what? I've had about enough of your haughty approach to what we do here.
I know what I'm doing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were joined today by Prue Stott and Jim Traswell, authors of Sing a Song of Sixpence. Look for Prue and Jim's work in outdoors publications, your favorite newsstands, and all over the internet.
You'll be glad you did.
I know.
Now back to Bjorn, Fudd, Tim, and Sue in Cabin Country.
There were times when I remember saying to the guys, I am so glad this is not my first show ever.
Mm.
Because this one was a little tricky. We'd all be like, like this was not my very first day on the show, because it'd be like, yikes.
One thing we could say about having your first time on the show, and this applies to a lot of the celebrities that would show up as guests, invariably there'll be a script with Piscataquattawattaquattamoggin.
Don, can you fix that? Say it again, Tim.
Piscataquattawattaquattamoggin. It's been a couple of years since I said that.
I know.
So that would be in the script, and it looks... bizarre.
Yeah.
It was a rite of passage, really.
Right.
And so Brad Paisley, we were talking about that earlier, or Meryl Streep or whatever, and they would totally freak out. And we learned, just memorize it. Just listen to us say it. Yeah. Don't look at it, because your mind is going to try to, like, don't act. So lift your eye off the page when you just memorize it. Piscataquattawattaquattamoggin. Okay. Yeah. They go like that. Yeah. So when you get to that, take your eye off the page, because your mind is going to try to break that down. And then they would get mad when they would trip. They'd be mad at themselves. Mm. But I said, you know, we say ahead of time, it's funny if you get it right. It's funny if you screw up.
Mm. Right.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
So
that's one of those words my mom would have said, you said it, you clean it up.
Right? Oh, that's funny. So you both had 21 and 24 years on the show, right? So like in the early...
24, 22. With Garrison.
With Garrison, yeah, right, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just going to go back to like the early days then. Was there an adjustment period in getting used to how you all worked together, or did you kind of, I mean, you kind of came in experienced, Tim with radio and Sue with theater.
And improv.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, so you, I mean, you were professionals when you started, of course, but how did the early days go? Was it any different?
Don, am I doing all the talking? you could cut some of the talk.
No, that's all right.
Take it away!
We did not wear headphones in early years. So when Garrison quit the show in the late 80s, moved to New York, moved to Norway, or Denmark, then moved to New York, and he started up the show there in New York called American Radio Company of the Air. Mm. And that was the first time they had a professional actors. That was a cast of actors on the show. They had a bunch of New York actors. So then 3 years later, he decided to bring the whole works back to St. Paul. And he wanted brought two New York actors with him, and he wanted to find two local actors because he wanted a local sound kind of thing. And so there was auditions, whatever. Uh-huh. So I was lucky to get the nod, but now I totally lost the question. We didn't wear headphones. That's where I was going.
Oh, okay.
We didn't wear headphones at the beginning because these were all actors, and they figured well, they had monitors on the floor. As long as you could hear yourself, that was fine. And they were all from theater and that kind of stuff. So I come on, and I'd done voice work for years already at this point, mm-hmm. and theater and improv, but not a whole lot of live radio. Well, live radio, who has that on their resume, a lot of live radio? I mean, it just doesn't exist, right?
Right, yeah.
So the first show, I was being told, you're kind of blowing out the mic. You're kind of blowing out the mic. There's like a and it's like, well, are you not hearing yourself? So they're trying to pump up the monitors. But Garrison didn't like to have a whole bunch of monitors on the floor. He thought that was messy. And so sound effects guy, Tom, always wore headphones because mm-hmm. he really needed to hear the nuance of his own stuff and then hear everybody else. So that was a given. Oh, he wears headphones. So then the thing was, why don't you, Sue, wear headphones? This is before Tim was on. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden I wear headphones and I'm like, oh, well, now I can monitor myself better. Now I get what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And now if I want to scream and yell, I can lift my face, my face away from the mic, lift my mouth away a little bit, and not scream and yell into the mic. So that was great. So then that started the thing. So then when Tim came on, you didn't know life without headphones.
No.
You were born with headphones.
So everything was pretty natural. Mm-hmm. Blending in, and we're off and running.
Yeah. So at that point, then the theater people kind of stepped away, and it just became those of us with Tim and I kind of meeting of the minds. But we had done voice work together for years before that, so we knew.
So you learned the dynamics of the microphone.
Yeah.
How to approach it. And
but from then on, we wore headphones. Because it was like, okay, we need to hear the sound effects too, and we need to hear. And coming from the floor, it's just. The wedges from the floor, it's not the same.
This is Linda Wertheimer, NPR News in Washington, with a special report from the Middle East. John, can you hear me?
Yes,
do you
I hear
me
you
now?
I
sorry,
can hear
I stepped
clear,
on you
Linda.
There. It's
sorry,
Linda.
I'm
go ahead, John,
time.
Go ahead. We have you, John. Go ahead.
Having a little trouble with the satellite delay there.
Yes, I understand. There's a delay with the satellite. Go ahead, please.
You want me to go ahead now?
Yes, go ahead, John.
This
we're
is
ready
John,
for you
I'm
now,
right
John.
The provincial capital of. I'm sorry, Linda. Did you say something?
I said we're ready for your report, John.
You want me to do that now, Linda?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Also, we would provide a lot of the background.
Yeah.
In addition to Fred or Tom doing specific sound effects, we're the crowd.
Okay.
We're doing all the stuff that
we're the people going back and forth in the airport.
Right. Okay.
Talking about these.
We're like, honey, don't touch that. Don't touch that.
Blueberries.
It's like, oh my God, I hate this flight. I hate this flight. Yeah. And we would create all these little scenarios, and we would be, especially for those rhubarb scripts, sound effects scripts, where it was like an airport or a state fair or a whatever, and we were all that stuff in the background.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun to do.
Oh, yeah.
And then your improv skills pop up because you didn't want to just go yada, 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 blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Right.
So we would actually say real things. I would create little scenarios for myself. And then, but then you have to be different people. So then you'd be from different parts of the country or whatever.
Garrison, what's my backstory? Yeah, right.
That would be my last day on the show.
That would
be
exactly.
I was going to say, I can't imagine him liking that.
I'm trying to chart my character. I'm just wondering what the motivation is here. And
you're a major network sportscaster.
That's when the Sharpie comes out and crosses out the character altogether.
Yes, right. No, that's when those scripts just don't get done.
That's
you just
the other
sit
thing.
Backstage.
The writing is so good that we rarely needed any direction as to what this character might be.
Right.
It just come out because of the writing.
Sometimes he would steer us. We would make a choice. Mm-hmm. We would make a choice at the Friday night read-through. You just make a choice. You just dive in, make a choice. And if you didn't say anything, great. Then that's if it's not a reoccurring character, mm-hmm. then that's what that character is going to sound like. And a lot of our reoccurring characters started as a one-off. You know, mm-hmm. we didn't know Ketchup Advisory Board was going to be a thing, or Ruth Harrison Reference Librarian. It was a one-time-only thing. So you would start with that, and he might say, oh, like there's the famous one where he said to me, another character described me as sort of a tall, a statuesque kind of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a choice, and he said, I'm going to stop you here. I think she's even taller than that. So I remember that was my first year on the show, and I remember thinking, okay, we're not in Kansas anymore. So, but it turned out to be like, oh, so I lowered my voice because he's waiting for me to adjust right
mm-hmm,
then and there.
Mm-hmm.
So I lowered my voice and not again. Then, of course, the rest of my life, I've met all these very, very tall women with little tiny voices.
Oh my gosh.
I know I'm 6'1", but I talk like this. But I think, well, not all tall women talk like this. But I think she's taller than that.
What are you looking at me like that for?
Nothing.
You're looking at my left eyebrow, admit it.
I'm just struck by your beauty.
No, you're staring at this one hair follicle that got infected, and you're thinking, oh, is that a big pimple or what, aren't you?
No, it didn't even cross my mind.
There's redness there, isn't there?
It looks fine to me.
I moisturized, I used cleanser.
No problem.
I called my facial man, Mr. Chuck, but he is not picking up. He is not responding to his pager.
What if you just put some flesh tone on it?
Oh, you are staring at it. I could kill you, and so I will.
Oh!
Serves you right. You want to know what drop-dead beautiful means? That's what it means.
So there were times when we might say, oh, I think she might be a little more Southern, or he might be a little older, or he might do that, a little bit of stuff of what he heard in his head.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be that. And there were contributors. He did have writers who would contribute throughout the years.
Oh,
sometimes
okay.
you did, even, too.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you wrote some scripts, some cowboys.
Especially, Cowboy, I forgot about Dusty.
Yeah, Dusty and Lefty.
sometimes when he'd do, you know, celebrity voices, I would give him a... But he was great at writing one-liners for these celebrities.
Yeah.
You know, I was always amazed at that. He just really captured...
For someone who said he never watched television.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Or movies.
Right,
clearly.
He just read the newspaper.
He knew what he was doing. Huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of movies, in 2006,
yes.
Robert Altman came and made a film version of A Prairie Home Companion. And earlier, Sue, you had said that Robert Altman just asked if you could like talk and walk at the same time.
Right.
So that was your audition, basically, or how?
He'd come on the road with us a few times. And he said, I know you can stand there in front of microphones and be brilliant, but can you walk and talk at the same time? And I said, I hope. That would be the plan.
Wow.
So we actually shot it in 2005.
Okay.
It came out in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And Altman had a different idea. Garrison had a different idea. Garrison wanted to do a Lake Wobegon movie.
Oh, okay.
And then a friend of Garrison's hooked up Garrison with Altman.
Okay.
And said, well, why don't you talk about that? And Altman came to see the show live because his wife was a huge fan.
Oh, okay.
And so he came with her one time and said, no, I want to do a movie about the radio show.
Yeah, he liked backstage situations, and that's why he assembled this mighty cast. And he was able to do it in one location. He was dealing with leukemia and chemotherapy and all that at the same time. He loved the idea of having one spot, basically, where he could put together this whole story that Garrison wrote.
Yeah, so he took over the Fitzgerald, and they remade all these rooms to be different places and makeup rooms and stuff that didn't really exist. And Mickey's Diner was the only other
location. Yeah. I played a short order cook. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of the epilogue to the movie.
And where, the prologue, too.
And the prologue.
Yeah.
Where Sue, this little scene at the end of the movie takes place maybe a year or two after the show closes.
Yeah.
Sue's the short order cook.
I'm a waitress,
and I'm mm-hmm. a short order cook.
Okay.
So, anyway.
But there were supposed to be scenes.
Yeah.
That we did.
Those were all cut. Don?
Yeah. You know what that's like, right, Don? No,
Don.
In fact, we show up that night.
Suddenly Jack Benny.
It was supposed to be a nighttime shoot, so it's the middle of the night, we're doing this thing.
Yeah.
And so we're all ready. We had our lines memorized and all that kind of stuff. We're all ready. And Altman goes, no, we're not going to do the scene at the door. We're not going to do that scene. And where Garrison and everybody come in and we greet them. And then we're not going to do that scene. And then remember, Woody and
Dusty and Lefty as
John C. Reilly were really not happy because there was a big scene with them at the counter.
Oh.
And Altman goes, no, we don't need that scene. We don't need the scene. Ooh. And they were mad.
Yeah. Oh, really?
That was a little inside thing. This just in. can you give us a little ticker tape? Yeah, Doug. Yeah. They were not happy. And I remember thinking, you guys are like movie stars. What do you mean? This is the first time this has ever...
This happened.
I mean, John C. Reilly's going, I memorized that scene. And he was just like, he was mad. And I thought, seriously?
Looking for a beach ball to take.
This is the very first time this ever happened to you? Where this, Alvin said, no, I want to concentrate on this scene. And we don't need that. We don't need those scenes. I wouldn't use them.
Wow.
But talk about the brilliance of these actors. John C. Reilly learned how to spin a lariat.
Right.
With two hands, two lariats going.
Yeah. Well, Pop Wagner, who's a local folk musician and been on Prairie Home in the old days, and he was in the movie, and Pop taught John C. Reilly backstage one day.
Yeah.
And John just got so enamored, and so they decided to put it in the... I think Altman was like, well, if you can do it good enough, we'll put it in the movie. But
I remember sitting in the little ante room right off the stage... Right, and...
Because Tim was the stage manager.
I was playing the stage manager.
Al, the stage manager.
We were waiting for the next scene or whatever at the beginning of filming, and Woody and John C. Reilly were sitting there with me. Woody says, well, he's kind of a quiet guy, isn't he? And he said, do we have any scenes together? I said, yeah, there's one scene with the two of us. And I had gone through the script, and I wrote a couple of jokey things that he might be interested in saying just on the sly,
Uh-huh.
And so there's a scene where I come in as the stage manager scolding him for being obscene in the last week's show.
Yeah.
And he said, about that song you sang last week. And he said, I'll give you my moonshine if you show me your jugs. No, not that one. Loving you ain't easy, but I hear your sister is.
Oh.
Anyway.
So those are from Tim.
You wrote that.
I just gave him those lines, and right before we did the scene, which was a week or two later, he said, what were those things again? Because the only line I had was, come ride me bareback and I'll sing you a song or something. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
But he just threw those in,
And they stuck.
They didn't object, Continuity didn't go. Wait, where is that coming from?
There was Altman's his direction often was he would want to just read through the scene for me. And so we would get together, whatever the scene was. Okay, we read through it once. He said, "All right, when we do it, just make it messier." Let's make it messy. That was about it. And then he would spend the next 2-3 hours adjusting lights and camera angles and set pieces. And there was all those mirrors. Remember in the makeup room, there was all these mirror things, which how they shot around that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because, they've got this huge camera on a cart and there's like 6 people clinging to it.
Yeah.
Right. And they're doing this thing and all these mirrors and you never see them.
Never saw
them.
Right.
You never see them.
Amazing. Yeah.
I mean, they may have edited out because Don knows what that's about.
Yeah,
they may have edited a couple out. But I mean that there was enough to work with.
Yeah.
And even in the rushes sometimes, you're like, you know, we'd be applause. It's like, how did you not see yourself in those mirrors?
Yeah.
So that was always kind of amazing. But the big direction was just a little messier. A little messier.
Little sidebar to the production. One of our production assistants was Allison Williams, who went on to star in Girls.
Brian Williams' daughter.
Brian Williams' daughter. And Brian Williams was a huge fan of the show, and he came twice to watch the rushes, and then...
Well, he came to our show. He came to our show a few times in New York, but for the movie.
And then
he came out to visit.
Woody Harrelson had a party.
Had a birthday party.
He had rented a house in Highland Park. So Brian Williams was there, and the governor was there.
The governor was there. Our colorful governor at the time, Jesse Ventura. He was a former. He was a newly former governor, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Did they ever ask you to be Jesse on the show?
Well, okay. So here I have to tell you. Okay, so I see in the driveway. First off, it's like 95 degrees outside, and Woody doesn't like at the time.
Yeah.
Woody, maybe this has changed. Maybe you're different now, but he didn't want air conditioning on.
Oh.
Right. So it was just sweltering inside. So we were outside a lot. It was still sweltering outside, but we were outside. So we're in the driveway, and I see Tim and Brian Williams huddling together. And so I'm like, hey, what's going on? And they're doing dueling Jesse Venturas.
Actually, it was dueling Tom Brokaw's.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Tom Brokaw.
Brian Williams was dueling Tom Brokaw.
That's right. I'm sorry.
And I said, oh, my God. That's, you know, he was kind of in the catbird seat waiting to take over from...
That's right. I'm so sorry. It was Tom Brokaw. It was hilarious. Oh, my gosh, it was hilarious.
But then the governor came over.
The governor came over.
What are you doing here?
And he did have a long conversation with the governor.
Yes, right. I remember we were shooting the last scene, the curtain call scene. And they're trying to stage it all, you know, and there's singing. Geraldine Steele is singing. And they're trying to figure out, you know, when... Lily Tomlin and Meryl Streep and Lindsay Lohan, all these guys do their thing. So they're working all that out. And so they're, okay, we're going to come in, you're going to do the call, everybody's going to come out, then you're all going to leave, and then I want, you know, all been saying, and then I want the main cast to come out and just kind of come out and dance and stuff like that. So just kind of casual, and the credits will start rolling and you guys are all dancing and kind of casual on stage. So they do that, and then they're, okay, let's adjust some cameras, some lights, let's do it again. And Meryl Streep says, how come Garrison won't come out with us? Because Garrison just, you know, backstage. She goes, I just feel like I should just grab him. I said, just grab him. She goes, no, but will you be mad? I go, no. Just grab it. No. Did that sound like a Minnesotan? No. No. Gosh. Darn it. Just grab him. So she said, should I tell him? And I go, no, because he will say no.
All right.
Just grab him, and he will go. Okay. Are you sure? I go, yes, he will, because he knows the cameras are rolling. And there were, Judy was one, Tim's wife was one of the extras. There's a couple hundred extras out there as audience members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there was actually an audience there when they were shooting a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
Those guys were supposed to respond and everything, that kind of thing. So by God, she goes and she pulls him. He's like, what? He goes out there. And then she plants a big old kiss on his face, on his lips. And he was like, what?
Yeah.
And then I didn't tell her to do that part.
No.
I just said, I didn't know she was going to do that. It doesn't matter. But I gave her the, yes, grab him, yes. Are you sure? Yes. Will he be mad? No, he'll go, I promise.
That's funny, because I did think in that scene that Garrison looks a little lost there. I mean, like, he just stumbled on.
Yeah, no, she went and grabbed him out there. But they did other takes.
Okay.
Where it looks like. I mean, where Garrison knew what was going to happen at that point. No, they used that first one.
Okay.
I can tell. I can tell he's a little thrown.
Incredible feel of the middle school dance. Just grab the guy.
Yeah, just grab the guy. Grab the guy. Oh, kiss him too. Sure, go for it. If you're going
to
do that, go for it.
Tell him to quit biting his upper lip. Yeah.
I think I heard Steven Spielberg say that the first and seventh takes were always the best in his experience directing. So there's something about that first take that is so
spontaneous. Well, there's the fresh, and you know, that's the way in voice work too. We're often, you end up doing 57 takes, and then they end up using the first one, and you go, okay, why were we here for 57 takes?
Yeah.
There was a story, another movie story real quick. I Donna the Makeup Lady, I find... LT Jones?
Yeah, LQ Jones.
He plays the dead guy. He dies. He's the old cowboy on the show. He dies, and I go into his dressing room, and he's I'm like talking to him. I think he's asleep. Then I find out he's dead. So we do a run through. First, Altman says, "Why are you saying all those words?" And I'm like, "Cause that was what was in the script." I said, "That's in the script." And he looks up the script person, and she says, "That's in the script." He goes, "Don't say any of those things." I say, "None of them. Don't say any of them. Do you not want me to speak?" "No, you can speak. Just don't say any of those lines." "So you wanted me to improvise?" "Okay, so all right, and minimal." "Okay." So I'm still like, "Hey, what's going on?" You know, what was the guy's? I can't remember the character's name. Anyway, what's going on? And I realize, oh, he's asleep. So the third take, we go through it, and he said, "Sue, I really like when you were playing with the record player. I like that when you did that. So do that again," because I was just finding things to do. "Okay, good. Do that again. That'd be great. And then do that, and then you notice that the guy is dead, and you react." Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I do that, and I go to look at the guy, and the actor moves. He moves.
Okay.
And I am waiting for Altman to yell cut. I think what happened is we woke him up.
Oh,
I think
really?
He actually fell asleep. Because this was for about a couple hours. I think we started shooting like 8 o'clock at night. And he was supposed to be dead and not, you know, I don't want to see him breathing. I don't want to see him, you know. So the actor's like, "No, I can do that. I can do that." And I think, so he moved like this. So I'm standing there looking at him and I'm waiting. I know better. You don't cut the scene. Right. You wait till someone cuts the scene. Right. So I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, and I'm about to laugh. Yeah. And I'm about to improvise. Mm-hmm. "Oh, it's a miracle. He's alive. He's alive." Because I'm thinking, well, they're going to yell cut. And they're not yelling cut. They're not yelling cut. And I'm like, so I just go on with the scene. And I'm like, what the hell? So I go on the scene. I sit down like I'm supposed to sit down. Or put the blanket over and then I sit down. And then he goes, "Cut. Brilliant. That's the one." And I go, "He moved." No. He moved. And he's all like groggy, like, "Sorry, I think you guys woke me up. Did I move? I'm sorry." And I go, "No, he moved. I mean, like, dude, like this. Not just like a little tiny move,
a
but
twitch,
the,
like
yeah,
a
yeah, no, 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 the whole like." And they're going, "We didn't see it." So I said, in fact, I was about to laugh. They go, "We didn't see it. No, it was brilliant. That was the one." So they look back at the tape, and the camera was up high enough. They didn't see him.
Oh wow!
They did at that moment. Okay. They were seeing him. At that moment, they had gone up to look, kind of do me, just kind of see me, shoulders high. Hmm. And by God, that take is in the movie. You see me just staring at him, and I'm thinking, God, I'm about to laugh. I am totally about to laugh. Or say, wow, it's a miracle he's alive. And for some reason, Altman like, "No, I like that one. I like that you're just kind of like," he thinks she's not sure how to react. I'm just staring at you. I don't even. I'm speechless.
Huh?
And then
it was.
I know it's
totally natural.
I know
you weren't acting.
Or podcast is going to be like, maybe it should be a two-parter.
Okay, well, it just could be.
Yeah. That's a really long story. But you don't have to keep that story in. That could just be for us.
I don't know, we're gonna have to watch what Don cuts out of this.
That's right.
He's become kind of the star of the show, I'm afraid.
Darn you, Don!
too much publicity
at the
end here.
Of Planet of the Apes.
What we?
Don.
Well, oh my gosh, so many wonderful things about your experiences on Prairie Home Companion. Looking back on those couple of decades plus of working on the show, what are some of the fondest? You've already shared fond memories, but any great final words about that?
Well, I loved the travel, you know, and that was a super side benefit that was amazing. But just in general, being able to get great writing every week, you know, is such a rare thing. I'm sure that somebody that talented can, you know, spill out these things that let you do what you do. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thrill.
And I think for me, the traveling in the different venues, you know, anywhere from Town Hall in New York and the Hollywood Bowl in L.A. and Ravinia and outside of Chicago and these beautiful Wolf Trap, these beautiful, beautiful places and old Fox theaters in Atlanta and St. Louis and the history there. And that was, you know, as a theater kid, I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
So, and to be working, to be paid to work, to perform in New York City, you know, would be a dream for anybody that grew up in theater. But then working with amazing musicians and singers and actors and personality types and poets, You know, you just, my world was completely wide open and introduced to all these amazing people, and how every once in a while there was somebody with sort of a little bit of toed, but for the most part, everyone checked their, you know, attitudes at the door, and everybody was just sort of jumped into the soup. And they're all like, okay, we're live, baby. This is like live.
Enjoy yourself.
And not a whole lot of, you know, not a whole lot of lead time. So, yeah, have fun. Just have fun. And so I think that was made the experience so special, so rare, and so special, so different from anything else I'd ever done.
Well, oh my gosh, this has been so fun. I kind of knew it would be. It would be so fun to be sitting here with Sue Scott and Tim Russell, sharing their experiences. So, thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad you remember your old radio home.
What do you mean? You're only 2 or 3 years older than we are, right?
I don't understand
this.
Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket. Sure. That's the thing.
Sure.
No, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, guys.
Yes, thank you so much.
Fun guys. Did I say it's fun guy?
Fun guy.
Mushrooms. Yeah. Fun guy.
We covered that too.
They're all mushrooms. Good.
Thank you. And ciao. We'll see you.
Ciao.
We'll talk again.
Cheers.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Well, an unbelievable show, Fudd. I mean, just incredible afternoon of conversation and fun. I mean, what a great. Great afternoon's time.
It was fantastic.
Of course, thanks to Sue Scott and Tim Russell for their incredible stories, time, all the, you know, love they put into that show and our show.
Right.
It was great to have them
so
with
enthusiastic.
Us. And a great, great interview. I'm just unbelievable. Still kind of wowed by what went down in Tim's home. It was unreal. Right there in his dining room table, we recorded all those wonderful interviews. And thank you, too, to Judy Penley Russell, who added more stories, artwork, incredible tour of things past with the show and great stories and all that amazing artwork. She sent some home with you, Fudd, for crying
out loud. That's right. Judy, she did sketches of, you know, literally behind the scenes, on backstage, and would do sketches of Tim, Sue, Garrison, and the whole
gorgeous work.
Whole team, yes.
Very, very nice. And of course, Judy, we've got to thank you, too, for the wonderful spread you put out for the recording time.
And the coffee.
And, of course, the coffee.
Yes.
I think I had 4 or 5 cups. It was delicious. Thank you so much, Judy.
That's a must.
Fudd, you've got a few more thank yous you'd like to throw
out here. Well, we need to thank Garrison Keillor and Prairie Home Companion Productions.
Yes, indeed.
For the permission to use the segments from audio broadcasts.
Bits and pieces from yesteryear.
Prairie Home Companion. Those were taken directly from the CDs, Sue Scott's Seriously Silly. And Tim Russell's Man of 1,000 Voices, not faces.
Not hairstyles.
I was nervous, Bjorn.
Shoe styles, yes.
I knew I would trip over my tongue a couple
thousand
of times.
Well, we were a little in awe, I think, Fudd.
We were.
And if I may, we're going to throw out yet another thank you to Mr. Stan Tequila for the wonderful Birdsong recordings he's given us permission to continue using, and the excellence of those recordings. Thank you, Stan. Thank you, Don, for all your hard work.
You kind of
became pals with Tim and Sue on that. Man of few words, but
he was kind of reticent, but he kept us in line.
Definitely earned his keep on the production side. So it's good to have Don there and running the show.
And we should mention that this is just the first part of a two-part podcast. Yes,
indeed, we've got
more coming.
What do we have to look forward to? Part two, Fudd.
Well, Sue shares with us about her podcast, The Island of Discarded Women.
Outstanding show.
Oh, yes.
We've listened to several.
Fabulous.
Wonderful work. It's just a fantastic show. If you haven't heard it yet.
Yes, check it out.
Check it out.
Island
of
Discarded Women.
You'll really enjoy it. It's a great show.
And then we trip down memory lane with Tim.
The CCO days.
Memories of WCCO.
Indeed.
Then we went way back to his memories of the cabin he went to as a boy on Lower Cullen Lake in Nisswa, Minnesota.
Nisswa area. Beautiful spot. I really picked up from Tim. He loved that part of his history and just really loves to reminisce and at the same time reclaim as much of it as he can.
Right, so we get to hear about that next time.
Without a doubt. Sounds like a wonderful place. Nothing more near and dear to our hearts than cabin country stories. So.
That's right.
Well, you know, Fudd, during the last year of this, I'll just go ahead and say it, this COVID time.
Yes.
You know, we all had plenty of time on our hands, and some of us worked on podcast scripts and podcasts themselves.
Right,
some of us picked up musical instruments or paintbrushes or knitting needles or
what have you.
I remember talking with John Munson. He was talking about baking and baking breads,
building
cookies,
building
saunas. And in this case, Tim Russell became kind of the maestro on the ukulele.
Oh, yes.
He decided this is my next venture, and we were lucky enough to have Tim write for us a reminiscent song about the great old days at Lower Cullen Lake.
Yes.
A ukulele ballad. So we are going to send off tonight our listeners with the musical stylings of Mr. Tim Russell and his favorite ukulele as he sings to us about his cabin. Thank you, Tim. Take it away.
And we'll see you all next time.
Send us out. We'll see you next time on Cabin Country. Thanks again.
I want to go back to my little log cabin in this warm Minnesota. I want to talk with all the Olies and the Linas that I used to know. I can hear the outboard motors on their way to fish the bay. I can hear the hopeful anglers saying, if we don't catch nothing, we'll say the big ones got away. It won't be long before we board up the log cabin for the winter. It may look completely shuttered, but at least it gives the mice a place to stay. I'm just a Minnesotan and a homesick cabin boy. So give me one more weekend at the lake that I'll enjoy. I want to go back to my little log cabin in Nisswa, Minnesota, where the crappies and the sunnies and the walleyes and the bass go swimming by. Where the crappies and the sunnies and the walleyes and the bass go swimming by.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.